This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Childe Hassam is often cited as the earliest American champion of the Impressionist movement. His career took off in the late 1800s, and he went on to create more than 2,000 works of art. Hassam also became especially well-known for his true-to-life depictions of the world around him. He rendered cityscapes in New York and Boston, but also spent long periods of time in the countryside and became especially captivated by the Isle of Shoals, a collection of islands off the coast of Maine. A new exhibit on view at the North Carolina Museum of Art features 39 of his Shoals paintings in oil and watercolor. The exhibit runs through June 19th, and I'm joined in my studio today by three guests who will talk about it. John Coffey is Deputy Director for Art and Curator of American and Modern Art at the museum. John, welcome to the State of Things. Nice to have you here.
Happy to be here.
Hal Weeks is a marine biologist at the Shoals Marine Laboratory. Hello, Hal.
Yeah, happy to be with you. Thank you.
Kathleen Burnside, an art historian and scholar of Childe Hassam. Kathleen, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to start with you, Kathleen, and tell us a bit more about Childe Hassam's background. Born near Boston, tell us more.
Well, he was born just outside of Boston in 1859 and developed his early career there with work in illustration work and books, children's books, magazines, where he could get it, and subsequently developed into a watercolorist for his first professional work, then started doing Boston cityscapes, some beautiful ones like Boston Common at twilight, had an early trip to Europe doing a grand tour, and then a three-year sojourn in the late 1880s. Really, people are familiar with some of the French Parisian scenes he did, where he really brightened up his palette and came back and was a leader of the American Impressionist movement after settling in New York.
Tell us more about that evolution, the evolution of his style, and how it changed after his time in Paris.
Well, he matured. He didn't. The early critics, when he did these beautiful Boston scenes of snow and rain, used to exhort him to come in out of the rain. That they liked his pictures of real life, of urban life, of a modern life. But they wished they were a little brighter. And when he went to Paris, he did some of that, but he didn't entirely change. It's a misnomer to think that he simply became a French Impressionist. He wasn't. He was his own artist. He did employ a broken brushwork, but he came back, and what he really believed in was that Impressionism was an adherence to life around him. It was a realism. It was a paying attention to nature and to not go to forms and strictures of the past.
So tell us about the significance of the time he spent on Appledore Island.
Well, he went there for many years, and it was, I think, he was a bold personality. He was peripatetic. He was prolific. He did many, many works over his lifetime, and he traveled to many New England resort artist colonies and resort towns and throughout the United States. But Appledore was a little bit different, and I thought long and hard about this when we were working on the show about what made it different. And I think it was the stark beauty, the sort of remove. He enjoyed the cultural gatherings there around Celia Thaxter, but he returned again and again for the renewal of the nature of the rocks, of the sea, the unpeopled landscapes, and I think it was a place that he could experiment and renew his art every summer.
Well, we're going to find out more about the landscape and how it looks off of that chain of islands between Maine and New Hampshire when I talk to Hal in a second. But you mentioned Celia Thaxter. Tell us more about her and that connection, the connection that he made to the island, and why he wanted to keep coming back.
Well, she's the sort of the linchpin in the development of the cultural community there. She was a well-regarded a sort of poet, prose poet, gardener, just really ran a salon there and was very well-regarded in the Boston community, literate community, and she had artists come out, writers, editors, musicians, and created a really compelling environment for them to socialize and share stories and to work and inspire each other. She was raised in the White Island Lighthouse. Her family was long associated, and they were it was the Appledore House that they that they purchased it or that they built and supported that that drew all the dozens and dozens and hundreds of people out from the Boston area at that time period.
You've got this great cultural ferment on this wild place, Appledore Island. Hal Weeks, tell us about, you're a marine biologist there. Tell us about the beauty. What does the place look like?
Oh, it's, you know, to a first approximation, we're looking at 95 acres of granite covered with a lot of shrubby vegetation, largely dominated by poison ivy in the current day. But back in the era of the hotel, you had the hotel was a large palatial building with manicured lawns, lawn tennis courts, cottages, and much of the island that's today shrubby vegetation was probably pasture land for hosting the livestock, which they had to some degree or another for provisioning the hotel in part. The rocks are very stark, highly reflective of light, many different contours that vary from different sides of the island provides, you know, quite a rich contrast in form and color, depending on where somebody like Hassan would want to go to look.
It is a stark landscape. We're going to talk about the photographs that accompany the paintings that he did, but that can kind of show you in detail what this place looks like. But Kathy, tell me more about the other possibilities. I'm from the northern climes, and I have always been interested in the slant light in that part of the universe. Was that any part of why Child Hassan might have been attracted to this place?
The particular light?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure. I think speaking to what Hal just said, I think it might have to do with the light plus the rocks and the water. Just the way you know how you think that sometimes when you're also seeing a sunset at the seashore, it seems different than any other sunset, more vivid, more
right.
bold. I mean, I think it's the openness. It created this amazing sort of stimulation for him to paint, because he was really he wanted to paint truthfully. I mean, that's one thing we learned when I had the privilege of spending as much time out at the shoals with Hal and John. It was to see the island, and since I knew his paintings, and then all of a sudden I'm looking at the rocks and the cove where I knew the painting, and it, you just knew it was it. It was. He was not manipulating it in that sense. But I think he found that the color, the changing light, the changing condition, weather conditions that could happen on an island, just created an enormous amount of stimulation for his art. And he could do something different almost every day. In the same place.
There are paintings where you'll see things turn just a few degrees of the same subject, but a few days later or maybe a month later.
Exactly.
Hal, tell us how this exhibit, it came about in part because of your work in getting to know the island and figuring out where Hassan made these paintings. Can you tell us about that?
Well, sure. I was a student and a faculty member on the island. I've been going there for a long time, and everybody was familiar through the historic background of the island, of its origin, you know, of its first importance as a fishing station, then as a hotel, Celia Thaxter, mention of Hassan, and on to the present with the lab. But prior to the web, there were a couple of paintings which were very well-known, well-circulated, some of which were obviously depicting Celia's garden and rocks right offshore. There was no question where they were, and others where we didn't know where they'd been painted or even if they had been painted on the island. Subsequently, as we move forward in the time and the web made more images available just to casual search, I became amazed at just how many paintings Hassan seemed to have done on Appledore, some of which I could identify a location very quickly. Others were head-scratchers, and it just became a puzzle to be solved. Where was he when he was creating this painting? And as I said, some were quite easy. Some took an awful long time to figure out.
John Coffey, curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art, tell us more about the story about how this exhibit came together.
Well, it came together first because I was researching three paintings by Hassam on the Isles of Shoals in a North Carolina collection. These paintings are a promised gift to the museum, so I just really wanted to know where they were painted. I had never been out to Appledore, and I made a sort of cold inquiry to the Shoals Marine Lab, sending them images and saying, you know, can any of you help me locate where these paintings were made? And I got a very quick response from Hal, and it was an astonishing thing to find someone out there who not only knew the place but also knew a lot about Hassam and had already done a good deal of work in locating where the pictures were. And then Hal invited me out to Appledore, where we scrambled and scratched ourselves all over the rocks. And I think it was when I was sitting on a rather damp ledge looking at the scene that Hassam had painted for one of my three pictures, and how close, how, you know, almost literal he was in describing what was in front of him. It just seemed like this is a really neat idea, and this is a the reason to we could build a show around it.
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, I have to say I'm just enthralled with the idea of a place called Appledore. There's something so Lord of the Rings about it that you just feel like, let's see what that place looks like. So, well,
what's interesting is the island was really Hog Island.
I know that name's got to go.
And then when they built a big hotel on it, they changed the name of the island to Appledore. It's good marketing.
Something terribly whimsical and Hobbit-like about that. I love that. But what you've done, John, also is juxtapose these photographs from the island with the painting. So tell us about that decision.
Well, that was a part of the whole research project was to document the locations and to show the actual site and then Hassam's interpretation of it, because that really had never been done before. And it really brought out what Kathy was talking about as how faithful he was to the facts in front of him. There was not a great deal of manipulation of the scene or making a pastiche of various parts of Appledore. He picked a significant spot, something that meant, you know, that clicked with him. And he set up his portable easel and canvas and paint box, and he painted what was there. And seeing time and time again, I mean, Hal was saying some of the locations were very difficult to find. We only found the last few the last summer. And it was, in one of them, one of my favorites is we crowdsourced it, the students out at the Shoals Lab. We couldn't find this painting. We posted it, I forget, $25, $50 reward for anybody who could find it. And within a week or two, there was a student who sent me an iPhone photo of the location.
It's great, the digital scavenger hunt. Nice work. Nice work on that. Well, Kathy, let me ask you how common this is. I have probably a rude and perhaps incorrect understanding of what Impressionism did and how it kind of changed things. But my sense is that what the Impressionists were saying is, look, we want to get at the emotional truth of a thing. We want to be accurate and get at the truth, but an emotional truth, and might want to sacrifice some of the photographic accuracy. And here you're all talking about how he was honest about it and how you can see precisely there's a kind of precision in the Impressionist through the Impressionists style that he used. Is that unusual, or am I just not understanding art history very well?
Well, first of all, I'm a little want to make generalizations about Impressionism, because people think of Impressionism and they think of Monet and French Impressionism, and the American Impressionists were really different. Uh-huh. In the sense that they, if nothing else, came later. And the time was different, and they had different maybe cultural aims and perhaps were a bit more inspired by independence and vision rather than just a style. Really the only American Impressionist was Mary Cassatt, you know, being in the right place at the right time. But to speak to what you're saying, I don't know. I mean, I think that there are times when Hassam, and I'm speaking, this exhibition was wonderful, and we got all the so many pictures truthfully lined up with their sites, but it's, you know, only a tip of the iceberg of the production that he had over 30 years at the Shoals, and then that's only 10% of his production entirely. So I'm coming at it with a sort of a greater depth of imagery in my mind as you're asking me that question. And there were times when he wasn't quite as truthful. I think he was more truthful at Appledore than a lot of places. I think it brought him back to the literal rocks, to the light, to the things that were at hand in front of him. But he was an artist of great sort of boldness and rapidity. He went out and wanted to capture a moment, and in that sense, I think it was truthfulness. But he didn't just look to Impressionists for his sort of philosophical guidance. I think he was just a colorist. He believed in aestheticism. He was very influenced by Whistler. And all these things sort of went into a funnel, and out came the pictures that he created.
We are talking about an exhibit of the work of Child Hassam at the North Carolina Museum of Art today on The State of Things. Kathleen Burnside is with me. She's an art historian. And also with me is Hal Weeks, a marine biologist at Shoals Marine Laboratory. And John Coffey is the deputy director and art curator of American and Modern Art at the North Carolina Museum of Art. John, tell us, this exhibit was done in partnership with many different people. Tell us how you had to go find these things, because a lot were in private collections, right?
Right. Well, the first partnership was with the Peabody Essex Museum in Salem, Massachusetts. They came on board as a full partner, and the curator of American Art there is the fourth member of our team. And the exhibition will, after it closes in Raleigh, moves to Salem for the summer and fall. Locating the pictures was actually quite easy, particularly when you have Kathy Burnside around. She knows where all the pictures are, or most of them. some of them required a little more fair. I mean, if a painting had come up at auction and we didn't know who bought it, and you have to kind of poke around to find that. But locating the pictures wasn't that difficult, but convincing the owners, which included museums and private collectors, was a challenge in some cases, because these are gorgeous paintings and people don't want to take them off the walls, including museums. So it took some courting and either over the mail, but often, you know, personal visits to convince people that this project was worth it.
You did it. You've got 39 paintings on your wall now. And Kathy, I wonder if you could characterize the larger legacy of Child Hassam.
Well, the larger legacy.
Yeah, I mean, where does he fit?
Well, he's been well known for years, and I think there's been a resurgence over the last two or three decades of American scholarship, and in that sense, he's had some attention and had major exhibitions, retrospective at the Metropolitan Museum in 2003, I think it was. So people are aware of him, but they may be aware of his flag scenes or his urban scenes. They may be aware of, in some senses, the most beautiful poppy pictures that he did at Celia Thaxter's garden, some of which are very blessedly hanging in this exhibition. What they may not have seen before is some of the pictures that we've also gathered, which were these spectacular watercolors of the 20th century, this particularly 1912, his Isles of Shoals set, which excited me about this project. We brought them together, and most of them hadn't been in assemblage and exhibition in over 100 years. Legacy. He's an interesting artist who had great talent. There are a few prolific. There are things that are less good, but the ones that are very good and great are memorable. And I think he needs to be looked at in maybe a fresh light, not just in the under the term Impressionism, but in terms of his colorism, his aestheticism, the truthfulness that he wanted to paint the American scene, and he did so beautifully at Appledore.
I want to thank you all for being on the program. Kathleen Burnside, an art historian and scholar of Child Hassam. Hal Weeks, a marine biologist at Shoals Marine Laboratory, and John Coffey, deputy director of art and curator of American and Modern Art at the North Carolina Museum of Art. Thank you all for being on the program.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for having us on.
American Impressionist Childe Hassam, The Isles of Shoals, on view at the North Carolina Museum of Art through June 19th. Check out our website for details.